New year, new me! Forget it. And ladies, we need to talk. We're keeping it real. We're calling out wellness industry nonsense, Ozempic and its influence, and how our relentless striving for perfection is actually bad for us. So join us for the anti-New Year's resolution and start 2026 on the right foot. Search Ladies, We Need to Talk on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
From a quiet family lunch to a 50-year-old cold case and a frenzied beach stabbing, it has been a roller coaster as we've taken you inside the courtroom for some of the country's biggest cases. I'm Stephen Stockwell. Welcome to the case of the case of.
Just a week after four people sat down for a family lunch, three of them were dead.
Searching for clues in the murder of the 24-year-old pharmacy worker.
This was a tragic event that took the life of the crocodile egg collector, a husband, father, and work colleague.
Her family has always maintained she was conned into travelling into Asia by a man met online.
The Snowtown murders, the bodies in the barrels, and now the bodies in the backyard.
There is simply no expiry date on crimes that are as brutal as this.
This year, through more than 100 episodes of Mushroom Case Daily and The Case Of, we've given you a window into Australia's courts and decided what moments have been the most important. But in this episode, you decide what we're going to talk about. We recently asked you to fill out a survey and have been overwhelmed by the response. More than 2,000 of you have filled that out. And I have no idea what you have said. I have been refused access to the spreadsheet I have been so looking forward to. But in this episode, we are joined by The Case Of's executive producer, Claire Rawlinson, who does know what is in the survey results. And she's joining us in this episode to reveal some of what you've told us and also some of what you want us to tell you.
That's right, Stocky. And I have to say, I appreciate your compliance in not looking at that spreadsheet, because any spreadsheet that exists for you not to be looking at is, it would have been hard, but thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah.
We have had numerous requests from the audience for a get to know Stocky episode. So here we are. I actually want to ask you a bit about your experience making this pod, and we'll get to some of the other results in that survey. Don't worry, the analysis of that spreadsheet is coming. But I'll start with this listener-submitted question. Stocky, what made you interested in making this podcast, or were you just commanded by your bosses?
Yeah, this is a bit of an anticlimax, because I was just told to make this podcast. I started working at Audio Studios in 2024, started 2024. And when I arrived, I was told by Tim Roxburgh and then Audio Studios manager Monique Bowley that they had a secret project that they needed help developing, and would I be around to help make that? And I had no idea what it was, and I was just kind of intrigued by the secret project. And so I said, yes, let's find out a bit more about it. And they told me about Christian Silver, the ABC Melbourne court reporter, and this plan to make a podcast that would cover the trial of Aaron Patterson. And I've actually known Christian for years. We worked together in Brisbane. So, I was, excited at the opportunity to work with Christian, fantastic court reporter. And so I kind of ended up involved at that point.
So you said yes before you knew what it was?
I can't remember the actual timeline. I probably, knowing me, I probably would have. Secret projects enough to get me kind of excited in it.
Great sell.
Yeah, and I think, as I was learning more about it, it was something that seemed like a great opportunity to kind of help people learn about the court system through. That was always the kind of the plan for it, was, the Aaron Patterson trial is kind of a vehicle to educate people about the court system, which, we were doing through Mushroom Case Daily and now continue to do through The Case Of.
Okay, so then when you realised what it truly was, how did you feel about the task that you were given?
Yeah, I was excited about it. It was a lot of planning and development to kind of make it into what it was. And the thing I learned in the process of developing Mushroom Case Daily was that the courts are very hard to predict, and so you can't really plan around what you think might happen kind of 6 to 12 months out from a potential trial. And, mm-hmm. with Mushroom Case Daily, we didn't know even a week before the start of that trial if we would be able to make that podcast.
Yeah, the day before.
Yeah, the day before.
I mean, I don't think a day goes by still that we don't update the production schedule and make changes to even like a week from now. It's a constantly moving beast.
Yeah. The live case of spreadsheet with our various activities and plans, always in movement. And so, that's the really interesting part about making it was the kind of the challenge of making it was what sort of drew me to it originally and how we would do it, where we would record. You know, we originally thought that trial would be in the Melbourne Supreme Court and we were working out how do we get Christian back from court as soon as possible to record this podcast? Do we try and rent an office near the Supreme Court? You know, these are all the things I was working through. And then we ended up in Morwell. So those plans were, you know, moot. And then, we were off building a whole other process out there.
But how was the pressure? How did you manage the pressure? Because this was, I think, the most high profile, most high exposure and high pressure case to be reporting on in living memory, really.
Being in Morwell was a blessing in disguise for making the pod. I think had we been making it in Melbourne, it would have been really overwhelming. You know, whenever we came back to the ABC studios, and we only did this, I think, 2 or 3 days for the whole trial, we came back and made an episode in the studios in Melbourne. It was kind of overwhelming coming into the building because every single person you would walk past would want to talk about the trial or the pod or how it was going. And in Morwell, the thing I have kind of loved about ending up in this court reporting beat is that, you know, there's this real collegiality in court reporters. Everyone's working on the same story. And so there's actually not that much competition and everyone, you know, is kind of involved and deep in that same process. So like we all know the same stuff that everyone else in that room knows. We're all working on our own things. We're all really busy. And so it wasn't overwhelming in the same way that it was when I was back in Melbourne and on weekends and in the office and things like that. So being in Morwell made it a lot easier to kind of just like keep our head down, do the work, go to court, listen to what's going on, make the pod, rinse, repeat. For 3 months.
Yeah, it did seem like a real quarantined experience. And because I was back in Melbourne this whole time and, you know, often recording with you from home in the evenings. But there was a part of me that had FOMO, I will admit, because it seemed like it was just like this bubble that you had such like a strong experience of the collegiality there. Mm. But I could also see the toll that it was taking. So thank you for enduring what you did during the Aaron Patterson trial.
It's my pleasure. I got to know Rachel Brown, my housemate, during that whole time incredibly well, which was a real treat. And got to hang out with all these wonderful court reporters who I hadn't met before, not just people at the ABC, from all these other outlets as well. So I've made lots of good friends through the process as well, despite the personal toll that it took.
Yes. I assume you've mainly recovered now, but with a bit of distance. Well, you know, it's not just Patterson. Patterson's trial that we've covered this year. There's been Easy Street. There's been the case of the romance scam. I think we've done at least six other cases. Since then. So I'm curious, what are the moments that have surprised you most in court, like all the most memorable moments?
Yeah, there's a few. I think the one that came to mind immediately from this, and it's maybe a bit of recency bias, was in the committal hearing for the case of the Easy Street murder, so the committal hearing for Perry Crumbliss. Towards the end, there was this discussion about whether one of the charges would continue. And so Perry Crumbliss charged with 2 counts of murder and 1 count of carnal knowledge at the start of that committal process. And at the end, there was a discussion about whether or not the carnal knowledge charge would continue to trial. And it wasn't committed to trial in the end. There was this, I will describe as a very robust discussion between the magistrate and the prosecutor in that I was just really surprised by and just struck me as the kind of like the candor and I think just the nature that the prosecutor was questioned by Magistrate Sonnet in that. I was just surprised by it. Like it wasn't an interaction that I'd seen. It wasn't, I wouldn't describe it as aggressive, but it was certainly, Magistrate Sonnet wasn't kind of hesitating or hiding kind of what he was thinking about the case that was being presented. And, you know, there were really kind of like, I don't think harsh criticisms, I think probably justified criticisms, but just to hear them aired in that space was really surprising to me.
Yeah.
And then also in that as well, just the descriptions of like the 70s policing, you know, everything I come at this with is from kind of like a recent experience of mostly reporting on the Aaron Patterson trial, right? So hearing the descriptions of how evidence was gathered in the 70s and then, you know, stories of police not having gloves and things like that was just like kind of surprising. So that stuck with me a bit, but
I think it must just be every barrister's worst nightmare to face the wrath of a judge or a magistrate like that moment with Magistrate Sonnet, because there is such a reverence for the position and everything in the judicial system seems very reverent already. But then that judgment, that's what it is. It's a judge and facing judgment in just like a pure form like that is – I agree that that's one of the most sort of striking things you can see in a courtroom.
Mm, yeah, I'm terrified for the day, and I'm sure this will come at some point, where I get called out for a judge for either something that we do on the pod.
Have you had nightmares like that yet?
I actually haven't had nightmares about that. My nightmares revolve around like not being able to get into the studio to record the pod.
All the classic
radio nightmares. Yeah. That's a peek behind the curtain for anyone who works in radio or audio. There's a nightmare about not being able to get in the studio, the gear not working, not having something.
The mic not working. Yeah, there's no all, one can hear you.
Yeah. So that's the classic nightmare I have at the moment. Give it time. I'm sure I'll have the judge, you know, dressing me down for some reason, nightmare.
Did you have any other moments that stood out?
Yeah, the one for me I started thinking about a bit more was Aaron Patterson giving evidence. And I remember this whole kind of week really clearly. Like, there's a few moments I can actually place myself in the room and where I was at certain moments. And I remember quite clearly what I was thinking through a few of them. And one of them was the day that Erin Patterson gave evidence. And so before she gave evidence, we knew that the prosecution case was closing and the defense would have the chance to call any witnesses, knowing that Erin Patterson was a potential defense witness. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the moment where the kind of anticipation of whether or not Erin Patterson was going to give evidence, that was a really kind of like tense moment in the media overflow room in Morwell. And I remember sitting next to one of the ABC reporters and kind of like talking about that. I remember like, you know, kind of the conversation we were having about how, you know, dramatic that would be. And then also, you know, how we'd be feeling after Erin Patterson had been in the witness box for like 4 or 5 days. You know, that moment of tension, like the build to this moment of like, we're going to hear this woman's story, and then having to sit through this story for 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. And so I remember, her, you know, being, you know, taking, you know, getting into the witness box and telling her story is a really dramatic moment, hearing the story of Erin Patterson. And then I also remember 3 or 4 days later, sitting in that room, just thinking, oh, how long are we going to be here for? This is going on and on and on. You know, Nanette Rogers cross-examining Erin Patterson, I remember that because it hadn't been an interaction I had seen in a courtroom before. Most of the cross-examination of witnesses through the trial of Erin Patterson had been, you know, kind of softer. And the approach that Dr. Nanette Rogers took in that cross-examination wasn't aggressive or anything like that. It was just a style I hadn't seen where she would be presenting these ideas and saying, you did this, you did this, you did this, and then you have Erin Patterson denying that that had happened. And so I think that stuck with me as well. And then, you know, the juror dismissals that we saw in Patterson in the Singh trial as well, these dramatic moments in court of whether or not this whole trial, you know, that so many people would have invested so much in might collapse in those moments. You don't know if it will continue, if a juror will be replaced, if there will be a mistrial. So yeah, so much of that. And then also the lighter moments. I think Ian Wilkinson's chair, just kind of like the gas going out of it.
Iconic.
And dipping down in the in the trial of Erin Patterson. And then Justice Christopher Beale saying, oh, we do that to all of the witnesses, and getting a laugh through the courtroom. I think
I think it was to all of the pastors.
So it was great. It was a very funny kind of moment in court. And that kind of like breaking the tension in courtroom, I think in a courtroom is something that'll stick with me and I'll remember a lot. The kind of the lighter moments we see are always kind of interesting.
I agree with you on those moments of not knowing whether or not the whole trial is going to collapse, because when that happened with the juror dismissal in the Singh trial, I just was dreading if this falls over and there's a third trial. Mm. Like, you get really invested, I think, and particularly when you're watching victims' families being a part of that process, that the thought of going through all of this kind of thing again that's just a moment that we all dread.
Mm.
I want to ask you, though, if there's a particular case that's affected you most.
I think they've all affected me in kind of slightly different ways. I mean, every case that we've covered has been very sad.
Mm.
I don't think anyone ends up in court for something that, I think that's kind of the only reason that something like the cases we cover ends up in court.
Yeah.
There's a sad story that has kind of gotten to that point. So they're all really sad. The way I've kind of approached a lot of them is just from an analytical sort of grounding to try and kind of insulate from that. So, okay, what's being said in court? What's happening here? It's the, you know, the distance that we have in kind of approaching the pod in this way gives us that kind of space, I think, which is...
And impartiality as well.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of makes it a bit easier to approach from that sense. I think the trial of Erin Patterson, just because of the length that we were there, you know, we were away from friends and family for so long. We were making the podcast every single night. It was all that we kind of did for so many months was just kind of draining. And so that affected me in that way. And I think as well that probably a positive effect was actually kind of spending time around Ian Wilkinson, who was the only lunch guest that survived Aaron Patterson's lunch. And him showing up at court every single day after he'd given evidence is just this incredible demonstration of resilience. And then his kindness in forgiving Aaron Patterson during his victim impact statement, and then the statements he made outside of court as well. You know, I think what he said about, you know, how much energy is put on people who've done something evil over people that have done good is something I think about quite a bit. And then also just how he gave this statement on the steps of the court after Aaron Patterson was sentenced. He didn't need to. He spoke to the media there. And then at the end of his statement, he thanked the media for being there to listen to him.
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't have been there anyway. So
polite.
Yeah, such a lovely man. And so I think one of the benefits of this is being able to kind of be around that resilience. Like we do these, we cover these horrible stories, you know, all these people that are in these positions for, you know, awful reasons. And then you have these kind of shining lights like Ian Wilkinson, who are showing up and being there through all that as well.
Yeah, I think you kind of, through anything, like you say, that's sad enough to end up in a judicial process, it's you see like the best and the worst in humanity, because people's characters are tested so strongly. And like seeing, for example, the way Toya Cordingley's parents just managed every day of that trial, second trial, with stoicism and dignity and just like commitment to justice for their daughter. That's another one that stands out to me.
Yeah, and Donna Nelson's daughters as well. You know, making such an effort to travel to Japan to support their mum, all that work, and kind of, you know, being there for her, I think is, it's just these kind of inspiring displays of support that we see from people involved in these processes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get to revealing some of those spreadsheet results soon, but the last question I have for you personally is, what the biggest thing you think you've learnt about courts and the whole judicial system this year is?
There's one really big one. It is not called the stand. It is called the witness box. If you hear us stumble over witness box, it's because we have tried to say the stand, and in the back of my mind, I've thought of the dozens and dozens of emails that say it's not the stand, that's an Americanism, it is called the witness box. And also the mention in the ABC's internal language guidance that I took very personally, even though it wasn't targeted at anyone, that it should be referred to as witness box. So thank you, Tiger Webb, for that that reminder.
I think that was a reprimand to the case of sent to the entire organisation.
So we've learned our lesson. It is the witness box. And so it just the reason that I keep making that mistake is that it sounds mean when I say someone got in the box. And so I just have to, you know, kind of remind myself that it is the witness box. Not the stand. Anyway, that's the big one. But I mean, literally everything about court. I didn't know anything about court reporting until I got to Morwell, until I started talking to Christian Silver about how we make this podcast, really. But then the first trial I sat in was the trial of Aaron Patterson. And so I've learned about, you know, evidence in chief versus cross-examinations, all the rules of evidence, you know, silk versus barrister. There's so much that I have learnt. And I mean, think as well also just how kind of clinical a courtroom is. I don't think I was expecting it to be emotional, but I was just surprised about how much emotion a courtroom can remove from something that happens.
Yeah.
It is kind of incredible how that space just strips all of the emotion out of it and just has the pure facts of what happened and the rules around making sure something has been, you know, adduced fairly and all of that. I learned the word adduced this year. That's another one. So all of that. And I think something that surprised me a bit was also that a courtroom isn't somewhere where you find out the truth or where you find out why something happened. It finds out kind of if someone is guilty of X. It is quite a kind of very defined process. You know, this is the definition of what this crime is, and then these are all the rules that it needs, these are all the bars it needs to meet to be that.
Because you can also have a not guilty result and that not necessarily mean that that person isn't guilty, but that they weren't able to, that the prosecution wasn't able to prove beyond reasonable doubt that they weren't guilty.
Yeah.
And I think what you're saying is like you'll never really know what happened. Like often there is only one person who knows what happened.
Yep.
Even when there's direct evidence of an event, it might be that still you don't know what their intention was. So
yeah, I've spent so long kind of telling people's stories, and so much of that is kind of in the grey. You know, it's someone's experience and you hear their experience, then you hear another person's experience, and you're kind of presenting those facts to an audience. So they will make a decision on what they think has happened in a certain situation. And so that's kind of how I've told stories through radio and audio docos over the last kind of like 15, 20 years. And then you end up in a courtroom that has these kind of like really strict, like black and white rules. And it's kind of a shock to the way you go about it and the way that I thought about stories and facts and all of that. So, you know, kind of the way that lawyers work. So prosecution barristers and defense barristers, like a prosecution barrister is there to kind of, you know, put all the evidence that they've got forward. And then a defense barrister is there to basically make sure their client is treated fairly by the law. You know, this is the whole balance and this, you know, the purpose of the justice system, right? Like there's a system there and a case is being prosecuted by, you know, one side, and the other side, there's a team kind of defending the person who's been accused of whatever they've been accused of, and making sure that all of these rules that I've been talking about, these strict rules, are kind of upheld in that space.
Yeah, and it's this nuance that I guess you don't get unless you're really closely following a trial. Mm. And I think one thing that I've been challenged on this year is I was probably more of the view that courts should not be live streaming things, because having seen how that had played out in the US with Amber Heard's the defamation trial with Johnny Depp, that so many people became almost like vigilante court reporters who are completely inexperienced and who were spreading conspiracy theories and that kind of thing. And that a large part of that was because they were able to access information through like a live stream of the proceedings. But I've really come to see how valuable it is for people to get a clear picture of how a justice system works, now seeing how much people have appreciated that just through listening to this podcast. And that often the responses we get are that people understand our system better, and it's like demystifying something that it could affect any one of us at some point in our lives. So that I think is worthwhile, and where we can, and it does seem to be an increasing thing. Maybe it's partly because of COVID or just technology, like that there is more and more open justice and transparency. I mean, just recently, the sentencing remarks for Tom Silvani for his rape conviction were broadcast live. And it does seem like that's a little bit of a trend. So I welcome that.
On the other side of that, though, you know, there was the suppression for over a year over his identity. And even during the trial of Rajwinder Singh, we had a non-publication order put over the dismissal of a juror in that as well. So I think there's still, you know, more that can be done in that space to kind of make people aware of it. And I think when you've got somewhere that's so keen on suppression orders, you kind of need to be aware that there is also social media that isn't going to play by those rules and doesn't seem to be prosecuted in the same sort of way as like we would be if we were breaching any of them as well. And so I think there's probably a bit of distance to go between the courts and the media to kind of trust that the media will report things fairly if they're given that information, rather than kind of leaving it to this sort of like free-for-all in message boards and things like that.
Yeah, there's just always a balance, and it's the media's prerogative to push for as much access as we can get when it's appropriate. I want to talk about our inbox, because such a core part of this show is the what started as Mushroom Case Daily at abc.net.au and then now is the case of at the at abc.net.au. We are a couple hundred emails shy of hitting 10,000 emails this year. That is amazing. And people, they just share so much with us. Everyone listening, like this audience is, they are such an amazing part of making this show. And every time I get to work and open up the inbox, it's so good to just see the level of engagement that people have with the cases we cover. You know, we get the sleuth theories, we get the appreciation, we get the nerdy questions, we get the personal reactions. And every now and again, we get ones that cut deep, like this one, Stocky. I don't know if you remember. It says, "Hi, Stocky, loving the pod. So much so, I dressed up as you for Halloween. Hope you don't mind. I was spreading the good word all night to hashtag download the ABC Listen app, attached to some images and a video of me / you in action. I found the shirt at an op shop months ago and immediately bought it. So sorry for the inaccuracy of ABC Rural." The shirt is an ABC Rural shirt because Stocky used to work for ABC Rural. "And attached was a video of this brilliant woman, Jemima, impersonating you interviewing someone at a Halloween party.
That was one of the strangest emails I've ever read. It was so sweet. So, Jemima, thank you so much for dressing as me. Actually, I'm not going to thank you for dressing as me. That was a bit strange. But thank you for getting in touch and emailing about that, because it was lovely. And I'm glad that I inspired a Halloween costume for you. And, yeah, that you've enjoyed the case of to the level that, you know, you were happy to spread the good word of the ABC Listener at a party with your friends.
I think it's a milestone of success when when people are dressing up as your presenter at a Halloween party. But no, seriously, we do have some really touching emails. And there was one that we received sort of midway through the Patterson trial that stays with me to this day. And I've reached out to the person because at the time that they sent it, they didn't want it to be shared on air. It was just for the team. But I reached out to them and I asked if they would be comfortable for us to just share a portion of it. And we have Anthony's permission. Anthony wrote to us, it was soon after he had lost his 38-year-old wife, Carlin, to cancer. And this is just a part of the email that he sent. He said, "We lost Carlin on June 2, 2025, and I've been reeling since. What helped keep me afloat to an extent during the most challenging 2 to 3 months of my life has been the escapism of the podcast. I don't know if it will be a good thing or a bad thing that when I think about this trial and saga, I will feel a deep sense of profound and sad shift that occurred in my life, the type that you feel when you hear a certain song or taste something that takes you back to a memory, but in a weird, bizarre way, the stories you were telling made it bearable." That's such an honour. Escapism we think of as a sort of frivolous thing, but actually it can be something that really helps carry through people through really, really dark times. Mm. And I've noticed that a lot of true crime listeners are people who are bereaved or are also victims of crime. Mm. And I think there's something about, there's something comforting about listening to true crime and this podcast as well in reducing the sense of loneliness that I think people with those experiences have had. Mm. Do you remember getting that email?
I do. Yeah. 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 That was, it was, you know, very, very deep in probably month two or three in Morwell. And we had so many lovely emails from people talking about how much, you know, they'd enjoyed the podcast. But Anthony's one was one that really cut through and just helped us kind of understand as well, you know, how much of a difference something like that could make. Because, I mean, you know, while there was, you know, I talked before about the kind of the benefit of being away from the ABC and in the kind of bubble in Moore, you, you're kind of removed as well from the bubble of the people who are listening as well. The inbox was the kind of connection that we had to people. And so that's what made it. So I think that's what helped us connect with people through that time. And so yeah, Anthony's email was, yeah, something that I remember and find myself thinking about every now and then, because it's, I'm very, very pleased that we could, you know, be some kind of, you know, help at such a difficult time.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, Anthony, for sharing that with us. We seriously appreciate it. But we learn a lot about how to make this show from the audience and the inbox, really. Mm. You know, for example, another thing that came through at the end of our Patterson coverage was we had a few complaints about the titling of our verdict episode. We were told off because we put the verdict in the title, thinking that this is the biggest story of the year, and certainly of that day. Everyone will have heard it by the time that they come to the podcast, because we only published it, I think, 2 hours maybe after the verdict was delivered. Mm. We were wrong.
Yeah, there were a bunch of people who got in touch and had been kind of like in spoiler mode to avoid any news to find out by listening to Mushroom Case Daily at the time. And yeah, we had it in the episode. It was the first line of the podcast of the verdict. And so, yeah, I mean, I had just assumed, I think working in news, you kind of think that people are going to be engaged in the same way that we are in the news cycle. And it's just not something that I could avoid. I would have, I had half a dozen group chats going off all of that, that I wouldn't have been able to dodge that news. And yeah, we were completely wrong. So that has changed. You'll notice in all of our verdict episodes now, there is a, you won't find out until the jury is delivering their verdict.
Yeah. You actually have to listen to find out.
Yeah.
Sometimes maybe we will, we are open to feedback, everyone. And speaking of feedback, I'm ready to reveal some of the survey results to you, Stocky.
Great. I'm looking forward to this. What have we got? Where are we going with this? What sort of... I've forgotten the question we've asked.
We asked a lot of questions, but we had more than 2,000 people respond. So like a very significant sample size. Mm. I'm going to give you some of the big takeaways first.
Yep.
So We asked people why they listen. 54% of the audience listens because they're fascinated by true crime, about 30% because they want to understand how the legal system works. We asked people if they've recommended this podcast to a friend and why, and often they said it was because it was something that would spark discussions. And I remember back to the end of Patterson, the pleas to keep, and the part of the reason that we'd converted this podcast into The Case Of was because people were worried they would have nothing to talk about with their friends and family. And that remains true to this day. That's a big reason that people recommend this podcast, is because it's a conversation starter.
Yeah.
There's lots of appreciation for not sensationalizing true crime and remaining impartial. And I threw in a question on this survey, out of curiosity, to ask people where they listen and when. And 15% of our listeners actually listen in bed. 26% listen while they're doing housework, and 24% while they're commuting.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, of the 2,000 people that responded, only 10% said they might be interested in watching a video version of you.
That's fine.
Rude, I think.
Look, I mean, I'm more than happy to not have to do my hair and makeup every single time we record an episode of The Case Of, so not the end of the world.
Okay. He took that well, everyone.
Is there anything that people want more of?
People very clearly want more live trial coverage, and I can understand that. It is exciting. Like, there's suspense, there's a real sense of urgency when you're in a trial, and we're all heavily invested. That's not to say that the recaps that we do between trials, actually, like, the completion rates on those are often stronger than the live trial coverage, but I think people, for whatever reason, don't have as high expectations of them. But I have to read you this comment from one of the survey respondents that I really like. They say, "I like the genuineness of the presenters. I hope this survey doesn't impact their attitude. There's no need to improve based on listener feedback. What you're doing is not a known service. Consumers learn how to consume from you. It's not the other way around."
Oh, that is an incredibly thoughtful and considered response.
Well, so, pep talk.
Yeah, that's very kind. Thank you.
And one other request that I just am intrigued by. This person says, "Please mention any birds, including species, any interesting behaviour. They're not as common or as popular as dogs, but I'd love to hear if there are any birds involved in the cases."
Well, this is, I've got good news for you, because I have recently considered getting into a bit of bird noticing myself. So there could be, if any birds are coming up, I'll make sure that we're discussing them on The Case Of in future.
Noted.
Is there anything people want less of? Keeping in mind that me saying, you know, before every third question isn't an option in this
Wait,
one.
Did you look at the survey responses?
I get the general emails, so.
All right. We had a few little, probably predictable to you, comments. One night that I appreciated was someone said, "Stop mentioning we can listen to older episodes for more details. We already have." Speaking on behalf of the audience, listener.
Okay, fair.
We have been told over and over, though, this is probably the biggest note we've gotten of what people want less of, to leave the nice bits out of the start of the listener emails when you read them. We've been called indulgent, annoying, self-congratulatory.
No, I mean, it's just, that's what's in the emails. I was just reading the entire email, but I...
It's your commitment to accuracy.
Yeah, it just started happening in more. I'm not self-selecting based on the nice bits of the email.
There is definitely a suspicion that that's what's going on.
That's not what's happening.
I can verify that is not what's going on.
No, yeah, everybody who emails just likes the pod. I think you're self-selecting when you're emailing The Case Of. I think you already have to enjoy the podcast to want to submit a question. You're more than welcome to email and say, "Don't like the pod, but can you tell me about this?" And that will get read out if it's a good question. So, yeah, ball's in your court.
Well, the last thing that people want a little less of, that I know you're not going to indulge, people don't want you to continuously plug the ABC Listen app.
It's not my fault. It's a great app. You know, again, this is not something I can control. You'll need to take this up with the ABC Listen team.
Even though the people who complain about you promoting the ABC Listen app had this to say: "You keep saying go to the ABC Listen app, but I couldn't find it in there, so I listen on iPhone. Am I truly dumb? I have a PhD."
Well, if you're listening overseas, you actually can't listen through the ABC Listen app because it's only available in the Australian App Store. So I've learnt that through The Case Of Mushroom Case Daily. So,
but you also can have the app on your iPhone. I'm not entirely sure this. Yeah, I don't know what this person's struggle was, but if you're listening on your iPhone, you can download the ABC Listen app on your iPhone.
Yeah, great. Yeah, please, please grab the ABC Listen app. Great app. You know, I've told you enough. You already know.
It's very good.
Yeah.
I listen myself.
Is there anything, Claire, that we absolutely have to change in the case of going forward now that we've heard from more than 2,000 listeners with this survey?
Okay, well, I'll just table this one for discussion, but sometimes it's the little things. We had a lot of comments. People don't want the ticking music that we play under the 60-second wrap.
That's
what do you think? Can we take it out?
It's on a separate track in what I used to edit each episode. So, look, that's doable. I can just cut that out. We'll keep some of the music. Just the ticking is going to go.
No, I would be willing to compromise and take the ticking music out. It has apparently been too distracting. People can't focus on what's being said in the rap.
Yeah, we can compromise in the 60-second rap music. I can remove the ticking.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not compromising on the title theme.
Never.
That's very close to my heart now. I've listened to it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times.
Yeah.
So it's burned into my mind as an association with Mushroom Case Daily in the case of, so that'll hang around. Speaking of things that are burned into my mind in association with Mushroom Case Daily and the ABC Listen app, Claire, do we know how many people are using the ABC Listen app? I'm assuming all 2,000 people that replied, ABC Listen app.
So sorry to break it to you, Stocky, but not every single person who filled out this survey listens to the podcast on the Listen app.
Okay.
But 42% say they do.
That's good. I mean, I was expecting it was going to be like 98%. And so I was going to say to the eight people that aren't using the ABC Listen app, as long as you rate and review us in whatever podcast app you're using, you'll be forgiven. But to the 50%+ of people not using the ABC Listen app, that just seems wrong. But
that's a lot of reviews, though, to write.
It's a lot of reviews to write. So if you could do that, it makes it a lot easier for other people to find the case of to enjoy it in the way that you enjoy it. So if you could do that, I will forgive you for not using the ABC Listen app. But maybe I've kind of buried the lead here. I mean, the case of our episodes appear on the ABC Listen app slightly earlier through to some technical process that I still to this day do not understand. But there's also a wide range of other ABC content. If you're driving in a car at some point and you're like, there's nothing on the radio, you can just open the ABC Listen app and there's all this stuff. The ABC Listen team, I was talking about them before, they're curating it. They're thinking about what's going on. What are you doing in your life? You're driving, you're on a long drive? There'll be a thing there for you. They've already thought about it. Would recommend. Just check it out. Try it. Doesn't hurt. It's free. What's the worst that could happen?
Excellent promotion, as always. Thank you. But no, seriously, we might make some changes and it's maturing. We're still growing, but I am really proud of what we've made so far and so grateful to this audience. But also, Stocky, to you for just being such a great colleague. You know, you may think that you are an unlikely fit for a court reporting podcast, but I think you just bring an energy to what's a pretty traditionally stiff round in the newsroom. And you can make anyone feel comfortable, and all the reporters that we have worked with love you. So I'm looking forward to continuing the journey in 26.
Oh, Claire, thank you for putting up with me and helping make the case of a Mushroom Case Daily the successes that they have been, things that so many people have enjoyed. And I mean, it's not just you and I that have been making this podcast. There's so many people that have helped make this what it is today. So I want to thank Christian Silva, who helped develop the idea for this podcast as well, along with Tim Roxburgh and Monique Bowley when we were planning it at the start of 2024. Also Rachel Brown, who lived with me for 3 months while we were making Mushroom Case Daily. That cannot be understated how hard that would have been for Rachel Brown to do, and then to make a podcast with me at the same time. Both Christian and Rach taught me so much about court reporting, about how to tell stories. This podcast would not be what it is now without them. I also want to thank Oliver Lathouris and Matt Garrick from the case of the Croc Wrangler, Olivia Rousset and James Oten, who reported the case of the romance scam, James Wakeland and Rebecca Bryce from the case of Snowtown Parole, Alexandra Alvaro for the case of the Easy Street Murders, and Chris Tester for the case of Toya's murder. All of them have taught me so much. They've all been so lovely to work with. They've all been so willing to put up with me stopping them at various points and say, actually, no, can you explain that first? Which is, it must be incredibly annoying when you're trying to tell me what happened in a courtroom. And Claire as well. Of course, thank you to you for helping build this pod.
My pleasure. There are so many people that contribute behind the scenes as well. And I want to shout out Yasmin Parry, Tamar Cranswick, Tim Roxburgh from the Audio Studios team, who've just been such key supports at various times throughout this year. And also Audio Studios manager Eric George and head of audio on demand Jess Radburn. And of course, our legal queen, Jasmine Sims, who has been with us since before the Patterson trial even started.
Jasmine Sims is the real hero of this podcast, our legal queen. Jazz's patience and intelligence and wit has kept me going as we're making that and made sure we haven't run afoul of the many rules and regulations that we need to stay within as well. I also want to shout out some of the editors in the newsrooms who have been really supportive of this podcast as well. We've got Sarah Gench, Monique Hoare, also to our new supervising producer, Greg Muller, who's recently joined the pod and is getting us into building bigger and better things. And, you know, the unsung heroes of the ABC as well, Matus and Lily, who do all of the work behind the scenes in Audio Studios to get me to places like Morwell and to Cairns to bring you those stories. So they deserve a huge shout out for all the logistical work that goes into that as well. Also, a massive shout out to everyone who says hello to me when I'm at court. It was a strange experience to start with, but I really appreciate meeting you. It's very lovely when you come up and say hello and say hi. So if you're in court and you see me, please come up and say good day. Thank you to anybody who's emailed us, to anyone who filled in the survey that we've been talking about in this episode. We really appreciate your feedback, your questions, and your help to make this a better podcast. And finally, thank you to you for listening. None of us would be here without you. So thank you so much for hanging out and listening to The Case Of. You're going to be taking a day off on Thursday this week, and I hope you found some time for yourself around this period as well. But on Friday, we're going to be dropping the trailer for our next series. It is a really big one. It's something you'd be very well aware of. It's a defining case for this country. It's as divisive as it is important. And we'll have 6 episodes to tell that story. So grab yourself the ABC Listen app and you'll find out what I'm talking about on Friday. This episode was produced on the land of the Wurundjeri people.